All right. Bamidbar, the journey is the destination. Sounds like a corny title, I know, but that's basically the idea. So we'll do this in two parts. The first part should be shorter than the second part. The first part, we're going to discuss whether there's any relevance to the fact that we read Bamidbar as the last parsha right before Shavuot almost every year. Occasionally, it's Naso. But almost every year, it's Bamidbar. So where does that come from? Is that on purpose? Is it by accident? Is it just a coincidence? Let's see. So the Gemara Megillah says as follows. It says, it has been taught, Tana Rabbanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Ezra made a regulation for Israel that they should read the curses in Leviticus before Pentecost. Sounds like a very yeshivish way of saying this. They read the curses in Leviticus before Pentecost and those in Deuteronomy before New Year. Okay, so we read the Brachot and the Klalot mainly, the Klalot of Vayikra, which are in Bechukotai, before Shavuot, that's what Pentecost is, and the Klalot in Dvarim before Rosh Hashanah. What's the reason? So Abaye, or you may also say Rish Lakish, said so that the year may end along with its curses. Tech Lashana, Teha. I grant you that in, so the Gemara says, so I understand, I grant you in regard to the curses in Deuteronomy, in Devarim, you can say so that the year should end along with the curses. Makes sense that we should read the Klalot in Devarim before Rosh Hashanah, because we're about to start a new Shana. So Tichle Shana, Teha, Tachel Shana, Teha. We end 1 year, we say the curses at the end, so we say Kilo, that's it, it's over. And then we start a new year with Brachot. That makes sense for Dvarim and Rosh Hashanah, but what does that have to do with the end of Vayikra and Shavuot? What's new about Shavuot? So the Gemara says, as regards to those in Leviticus, is Pentecost a new year? Yes, Pentecost is also a new year, as we have learned. On Pentecost is the new year for the fruit of the tree. Where did we learn this? Who remembers? Where did we learn this? You didn't get up to it in Daf Yomi yet, but in Mishnayot you should know. It's the first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. First Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. Arba Rosh Hashanotem. There's four different Rosh Hashanahs, and one of them is Shavuot, which is Rosh Hashanah LaPerot. Right? So it's Rosh Hashanah LaPerot. Atzeret. Rosh Shavuot, Atzeret. Same thing. So this Gemara says that certainly we should be reading B'chukotai right before Shavuot, which we kind of do, kind of don't, right? We read B'chukotai last week. We never read B'chukotai the week of Shavuot, the week before Shavuot. It's never the last parsha before Shavuot. But why is it even relevant? What does it mean that Ezra was metaking this? Ezra set this up. So this is interesting because we know that there are actually two, historically, there have been two, at least two, orders of reading the Torah. You have the triennial, the one that where we finish the Torah every single year. That's the way that we used to read in Eretz Israel, in Palestine, Yerushalmi. And then there's the other one, which is the Bavli way of reading it, which is what we do, which is we finish every single year. Now, in the triennial one, it's not so simple that you should be reading B'chukotai right before Shavuot. It's not part of the cycle. The cycle doesn't end right before Shavuot. It doesn't end, for that matter, right before Rosh Hashanah. So that has to be inserted. That has to be done on purpose, according to Ezra. For us nowadays, naturally, we end up reading B'chukotai shortly before Shavuot, and we read the Klalot in Dvarim shortly before Rosh Hashanah. Now, Tosfot comments on this, and he says, "L'kach nir lihatam shanu mechalkim otan lefi she'anu rotzim lehafsik v'likot Shabbat achat kodem Rosh Hashanah." Here, Tosfot is wondering, why do we break up Nitzavim Vayelech right before Rosh Hashanah? If we have a situation where you have, you're going to end up reading, you know, Nitzavim after Rosh Hashanah, and then we kind of break it up. So we make sure that we get in Nitzavim before Rosh Hashanah. Why do we do all of that? So he says, we want to make sure that in between, Kitisa, as he's going to say, sorry, in between Kitetze, Kitavo, we want to be Mafsik, V'likot Shabbat Achat Kodem Rosh Hashanah B'parasha Shelo Tehem Medaberet B'Klalot Klal. We want to get Vayelech in between so that there's no klalot at all between the klalot of Kitavo and Nitzavim and Rosh Hashanah. He says, the same reason, For the same reason, we don't actually read B'chukotai, the Shabbat before Shavuot. We actually end up reading B'midbar, the Shabbat before Shavuot, in order to break up, in order to create a buffer between the klalot of B'chukotai and Shavuot, the Rosh Hashanah of Shavuot. Okay, so according to Tosfot, we happen to read B'midbar before Shavuot because we want it to be a buffer between B'chukotai and Shavuot. Is that clear to everybody? According to Tosfot, that's what he says. Everybody, that's clear? Now the Maharsha adds on to this, and he says, "Lekach tikan ken beparshat b'midbar kodem atzeret, kedei shetik klalot shel bayit rishon kodem atzeret, sheyashuv Yisrael lemisparam hanizkar beparshat b'midbar." So the Maharsha adds on an idea. He says the reason why we want to make sure to read B'midbar before Shavuot is somewhat separate. He says we want to make sure to get the klalot in the week, a week and a half or 2 weeks before Shavuot, but we also want to make sure we get B'midbar in before Shavuot, because that's when we start to count and we show that, oh, Hashem loves us, and we return to the original count, to the, you know, the large number of Jews, to show that Hashem loves us very much, as Rashi says at the beginning about the purpose of that counting. And he also comments and says the reason why Nitzavim is always before Shoshana is because we want to make sure that we get in, same thing as Tosfot says, we want to make sure that we get in all the klalot before Rosh Hashanah, and we put Nitzavim in because Nitzavim has a mitzvah of tshuva. Okay, shalatid yu nigalim ayidei tshuva kamifurash beparshat Nitzavim b'shavta ad Hashem b'shav Hashem. So in other words, according to the Maharsha, it is not the case that it's only b'chukotai and kitavo that need to be before Shavuot. We also have an interest in getting B'midbar before Shavuot and Nitzavim in before Rosh Hashanah. So the Marsha and Tosfot, they add on to the Gemara. The Gemara only commented and said that you need to get B'chukotai and Kitavo, the Klalot, in before Rosh Hashanah and Atzeret. But the Marsha and Tosfot add that it's also worthwhile to get B'midbar and Nitzavim also in before Atzeret and Rosh Hashanah. Is that clear to everybody? Any questions about that? Okay. So add on to this. The Abu Jam, okay, as a side point, the Abu Jam and many others point out that the real reason why, we'll skip the Abu Jam. Fine. What I wanted to point out over here is that the Gemara itself only has an interest in getting B'chukotai and Kitavo in before Shoshana and Atzeret. But the Rishonim and the Achronim, they add on that there is something about B'midbar and Nitzavim that is important to get in also before Shavuot and Atzeret. Now we get into the second part. Aside from what the Maharsha said, the Maharsha was focusing on the idea of Atzeret as a Rosh Hashanah, like the Gemara did. And we want to make sure to get in all the klalot, and we want to make sure that Hashem loves us right before Rosh Hashanah Laperot, which is Atzeret. However, based on other sources, there is good reason to think that we also have an interest specifically in reading B'midbar before Shavuot, because there is a connection between B'midbar and Shavuot. And we're going to find at least three different ways that Chazal point this out. We'll start with the Gemara Nedarim. This is the Gemara Nedarim Nun Hei. The Gemara says, based on a pasuk at the end of Dvarim, it says, when one makes himself a wilderness, which is B'midbar, right? When one makes himself like a midbar, which is free to all, which is chinam, the Torah is presented to him as a gift, as it is written, and from the wilderness, matana. Umidbar matana, matana nachliel, nachliel bamot. The Gemara continues with the drasha, but the point is, it says, umidbar matana. And once he has it as a gift, God gives it to him as an inheritance, and for matana nachliel, etc., etc., etc. So the Gemara says that there's this idea that Torah will be given to somebody who makes himself like a midbar. Question is, what does that mean? What does it mean that a person makes himself like a midbar? Shehu mufkar lakol. That's what the Gemara says. So before we even read anybody else, anybody want to make a suggestion? What does it mean to make yourself like a midbar? Shehu mufkar lakol. You guys can unmute and make any suggestions you like. You can even keep your video off so nobody knows who's talking.
Well, so I think maybe keeping the Torah free, maybe because, you know, we talk about Tamud Torah is the real mitzvah, perhaps, as opposed to just Limud Torah. So maybe the idea is that we shouldn't try to like hoard it. If we learn something, we should try to teach. We shouldn't try to make it for our own betterment only. We should.
You're saying it's on the melamed. It's on the teacher. That a teacher should feel that he is going to give it out for free. And you're not even talking about charge.
Yeah,
you're talking
basically about everybody should be a teacher.
Shouldn't try to keep it to himself. Okay. Right. Anybody else?
Maybe we can take a different level, and it's on the student and the personal learning. Everybody can learn on his own level. You don't need to be the Rosh Hashiva or a tremendous Talmud Chacham. You can learn it and still.
Okay, so it's kind of like a democratic way of looking at Torah. Okay, anybody else?
I think if you make yourself like a midbar, then you kind of, you've got nothing. You're completely empty, and you're completely open to absorb, like a clear rack that can absorb all the Torah that you're going to learn.
So you're saying Mufkar Lakol is referring to the person making himself open to everything.
Correct.
Okay, not the classic meaning of Mufka of Hefker, but maybe that's why it's Mufkar. It's he doesn't make himself Hefker Lakol. He's Mufkar Lakol, like he's open to everything, as opposed to being given out to everything. He is open to everything. Interesting. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi gets to go first. So Rashi basically says something similar to what Yechezkel said. Melamed Torah b'chinam lakol. You have to make yourself, you have to give out Torah for free. You can't charge for teaching Torah. Melamed Torah b'chinam lakol. Hashem says, ma ani b'chinam afata b'chinam. Just like I gave it out for free, you have to give it out for free. You can't charge. You can't keep it to yourself. The Ben Yehoyada has a different reading. He says, Yesh mefarshim hakavana al ha'anava. Shiyu hakol dashimbo. Ubaze nicha mashamar Torah nitna lo b'matana. So I think there's a little bit different from what Martin is saying, although it's very close, saying that the personality has to be a person who makes himself into hefker. That has to be his personality. Makes himself into to someone that's not makbid on anything, someone who is humble, someone who is willing to be, you know, doesn't take anything personally. And that kind of personality will receive Torah as a matana. Kimidata anava nikret ma Hashem, nikret ma, sorry. That kind of anava is called ma. V'hanav zoche l'ha'arat shem havaya de'alfin shemisparo ma. This is based on a Bala Turim, that Hashem's name, when you open it up, yud, hey, vav, and hey is 45. Someone could do the math if you want. That number, 45, is ma. What's he talking about? Why does he say that the midat anava is called ma? Who knows? Anybody know why it's called ma? Martin, I'm surprised. Do you remember what Aaron and Moshe said when the people said, you know, where's our food, where's our drink, all that? They said, v'nachnu ma. So what can we do? V'nachnu ma. We're nothing. What are we? In other words, ma over here means nothing. So v'nachnu ma, and the Gemara goes on and says that showed their great, they compare actually v'nachnu ma to Avram Avinu's anochi afar ve'efer. That Avram Avinu thought he was at least afar ve'efer. It was something. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen said, we're nothing. V'nachnu ma, we're nothing. So mem hei is a signal of anava. So according to the Ben Yehoyada, over here the idea is that a personality that becomes mufkar, that he's willing to take anything. He has no regard for himself. That's the kind of person that's going to receive the Torah. Of course, this is obviously connected to Moshe Rabbeinu, who is considered the Anav Mikol Adam, the greatest humble person in the world, the most humble person in the world, and of course Sinai as well, which is the most humble humble mountain.
Can I redeem myself?
Yeah, go ahead.
So maybe that's a chat in Ma'ashim lokecha doresh mimcha.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Ma'ashim lokecha, that's over there. Hold on once.
Or doresh mimcha ma.
Okay, sorry. Okay. Now, it's interesting that Rashi and the Ben Yehoyada have very different views about what this Gemara means. What's interesting is that when you go to the Midrash, the first Midrash in Bamidbar, it says, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe b'Midbar Sinai, l'mam b'Midbar Sinai, mikan shanu chachamim v'gimel dvarim nitna haTorah." By the way, I just forgot to mention, we have some multimedia surprises later. So make sure that you're able to turn on the sound so that you can be able to hear later. If you can hear me, you should be able to hear it later. But we have some interesting things to show you. So, mikan shanu chachamim v'gimel dvarim nitna haTorah. Some of you may have heard this before. And you'll certainly hear it before Shavuot, if you listen to any other shiurim. In three ways the Torah was given, Be'esh, B'mayim, U'bamidbar. Be'esh minayin, in fire, when it says, V'har Sinai ashan kulo, there was a lot of smoke and fire. B'mayim, because it says, Gam shamayim natfu, gam avim natfu mayim. Okay, that's from Navi. And then in the midbar, as it says, B'midbar Sinai. Then the Gemara says, why? Why each of these three things? So we're only going to focus on the Midbar. It says, Elama elu b'chinam l'chol b'yolam kol divrei Torah chinam hem. Right, so the Midrash's first answer corresponds to Rashi's point, that it's free for anybody. Anybody who wants it, they can have it for free. So you have to be willing to teach it for free. Shneimar, kol tamei l'chulamayim, anybody who's thirsty, just go to the water. Water's free. No, water used to be free. I remember. Dad, do you remember? Water used to be free. Before, in Brooklyn, we didn't have a water bill, correct?
There was a time that we did not pay for water, correct? Yeah,
capitalism. All right.
Remember that next time I get a bill.
Yeah, nothing's free anymore. So then the Gemara says, then the Midrash says, Davar acher v'yidaber Hashem v'moshe v'midbar Sinai, ela kol mi she'ona ose atzmo k'midbar hefker, en yochel liknot et ha'chokhma v'ha'torah. So you see, that's very similar to what the Ben Yoyada says, that it's a personality thing, that the person has to make himself into hefker. So it looks like Rashi and the Ben Yoyada are kind of fleshing out this Midrash and each seeing the Gemara in light of the Midrash. That's how I see it. Now, before we continue, because we're going to go into another major source, which is going to take us most of the time, I do want to show one more source that asks the same question and gives a very different answer, I think. It says, it asks it in a different way, Lama lo v'yana kadosh baruch hu b'pshuta? Why does Hashem take Bnei Israel directly into Eretz Israel and give them the Torah there? Ela amar kadosh baruch hu, im achnis ani et Yisrael b'pshuta miyad, hem achzikim b'ish b'sadeh u'b'karmo, u'b'teilim min haTorah. What's going to happen if I take them straight into Eretz Yisrael? People are going to start working right away. They're going to start working on their fields. They're going to start building houses. They're going to start their startups. And they're going to be so busy with that, they're not going to learn my Torah anymore. I'm going to give them Torah. It's going to be anticlimactic. They're not going to be interested in it. Ela, are ani makifan b'midbar 40 shana. I'm going to give it to them in the midbar. They'll have nothing else to do. There's no Netflix. There's no Amazon. There's no sports. There's no Michael Jordan documentary. Nothing for them to do. Nothing for anybody to do, so that all they can do is just learn Torah. They just sit and learn Torah. And they have plenty of food, they have the man, nothing to worry about, no jobs to do, nothing. This is where the Torah was given, so that they wouldn't have anything else to do, they would be able to sit and focus on the Torah. All right, I just want you to keep that image in your mind and see if it becomes relevant later. All right. Now we're going to get into the heart of the shiur. This is called the Sefer Talalei Chaim. It's a five-volume sefer on five-volume set on Chumash, although he has on other subjects as well. His name is Rav Chaim Cohen. He passed away, I think, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I think. He was actually a great Kabbalist, apparently. Most of his stuff is based on Kabbalah, but he makes it very accessible. He did not look like what you think he looked like. I encourage everybody to Google him and see what he looks like. He doesn't look like a great Kabbalist you would expect to look like. For one thing, he's clean shaven. But let's take a look. It's actually, I think, my favorite piece in the entire set. Not that I read the whole thing, but from everything that I saw, this is my favorite piece. And I come back to it every year when we get to Parshat Bamidbar. So I hope you guys appreciate it as much as I do. So Rav Chaim Cohen says as follows. He says, Matzav nafshi shel menucha, u'matzav nafshi shel derech. And I love his terminology. He says there's a psychological state of menucha, of rest, of peace, and then there's a psychological state of derech, of being on the path. Tivol shel adam, person's nature, shu mechapes lahagia l'menucha v'lanachala. It's natural for us to pursue a destination. We want to just already get to where we're going. Are we there yet? Right? Hadam evakesh et hashlemut. We want to become finished. אכן הנשמות שלנו מחוברות בפנימותן על השלמות העליונה, שלמות אינסוף ברוך הוא, וממילא הן כמהות וצמאות מאוד להגיע לשלמות. We just want to get to completion, right? שבועות is about שבתות תמימות, we're just waiting to get to the end. והנה עובדה זו שהאדם מחפש את השלמות ואת המנוחה, עלולה לגרום לו חושה גדולה בשעה שהוא נחסם בדרך ונתקל בקשיים. The thing is, it's natural, that because we're all seeking to be complete, to be perfect, to be finished, so on the way, when we run into setbacks that prevent us from getting there, we become frustrated. האדם מנימן וחולם על השלמות, וכאשר הוא נתקל בחסרונות ובעיות, הוא מתייאש ומתמלא תסכול ויגון, becomes filled with frustration and pain and suffering. אין נפשו חפץ הכלל להיות במצב של חיסרון. Nobody likes to be in a state of lack. במצב שאינו שלם. Okay? Because we aspire to be finished. כשאדם חולם ומדמיין בכל עת את המנוחה ונחלה, הוא עלול להתייחס בכל עת בעין ביקורתית לחסרונות ולקשיים שיש בחיים. We naturally look critically and with a bad eye on the things that prevent us, the challenges and the obstacles that prevent us from finishing. כמו כן, עצם הרצון להיות עכשיו ממש במצב השלם, עלול להחליש את הכוחות, and we actually can lose our ability, we can lose the energy that we need to get to the end because we get frustrated in the middle. לפיכך, צריך לדעת, יש מצב נפשי של מנוחה ויש מצב נפשי של עמל והתקדמות. There is a מצב of מנוחה, and then there's a מצב of toil and work and advancement. And they're totally different. They have nothing to do with each other. I'm going to jump ahead. מצב נפשי של דרך מכניס את האדם לדריכות. הכרת הסכנות, התרצות במאמץ ובעמל. When a person is in a mindset that he is on the way, that he's on the road, that he's on a path, and that he's not there yet, and he's on the way, so he is naturally always on the lookout for dangerous things. He knows that he has to put extra energy in. He knows that he's not finished, so he's got to put effort. כמו כן הוא יודע שהמצב איננו מושלם, כך שהוא מתרצה גם במעט טוב. And because he knows he's not finished, he's not even close, so he's happy with every little bit that he gets. האדם אינו מצפה לחוש נוחיות ומרגוע כשהוא מהולך בדרכים. When a person is on the path, when a person is hiking, okay, imagine you're hiking to the top of a summit. So when you run into, you know, a little bit extra slope, you don't freak out about it, that you have to walk up a little bit more, because you knew that was going to happen. You're used to it. If you run into an obstacle and you have to move it out of the way, it's no big deal, because you knew you were going to have to do that. However, if you're in your house, right? You imagine you walk around in your house and the kids left everything all over the floor and you have to step, you know, around things and the door is stuck and it's not opening and you have to push it open. It's frustrating. You know, you expect everything to be easy in your house. I expect that when I'm in my house, I expect things to be easier. במצב נפשי של דרך האדם מכיר את הסכנות. כמו חיילים, so it's just like soldiers הולכים באזור מסוכן. When soldiers are walking in a dangerous place, they keep their eyes open. They're always aware. הם בדריכות, לכן עומדים אכן לכל הפתחות ואינם מופתעים בהתקפת האויב. They're not surprised when something happens. They're always ready. They're prepared. However, when a person's in his house, he doesn't expect to be attacked by his enemies. Right? Somebody surprises you in your house, you're genuinely surprised because you weren't expecting that. הוא איננו מוכן למתקפה, לעמל ולהתמודדות. Somebody comes to you and starts to push you around, you're going to not have so much energy to fight with them because you weren't ready for it. In fact, he quotes a Zohar. This was surprising. A Zohar says exactly this. Amar Rabbi Shimon. That's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Man deragil lemizbal tzara. Somebody who is used to suffering. Avogav da'ati lefum shat tzara. When suffering comes to him, Salvil mitlanui velo chayish. He just handles it and he doesn't worry about it. Of a man de lo ragil b'tzar, but somebody who's not used to suffering. V'hava kol yomi betafnukin v'idunin. Right, tafnukin is pinukim. Right, somebody who's constantly pampered and spoiled. V'ati leitzara, and then he has some trouble. Ta'i utzara shalim v'alda itzrich mifke. He begins to cry. He can't handle it. Right, this is the difference between people who are used to pain, suffering, work, and people who are pampered, they're not used to it. All right, so I'll show you something over here. I have been looking for this clip for literally years. And I'll tell you why it was so hard to find. I'll tell you in a second why it was so hard to find. This is from a movie. Let's see if my internet is working. Hold on one second. It seems to be working. You can see what they designed. Oh, this is the advertisement. You guys love this guy. Hold on 1 second. We'll get past the advertisement. Okay. Okay. Can everybody hear when he was talking, by the way, the advertisement guy? Because I think I have a way to optimize this. 1 second. Here. Okay. Go back for a second. This is from a movie called Rocky Balboa, which is actually Rocky VI. Raise your hand if you saw Rocky VI. I actually can't see you anymore. All right. Anyways, Rocky VI. Rocky V was terrible, but Rocky VI was actually quite good. And look what happens over here. Let me just give you some background. He's talking to this boy. The boy had just asked him, you know, you own your own restaurant. Rocky's standing now outside his restaurant, and he just ordered some fruits and vegetables, and he's loading up the fruits and vegetables by himself. So the boy asked him, you know, why are you doing this yourself? Don't you have people who work for you? So take a look at what he says.
It hard makes your head strong. You know, like when I was a kid, I'd stare off at these street lights for like 30 minutes and try not to blink, or I'd be squeezing a ball until I thought my hand was going to explode. I was teaching myself to be uncomfortable because I knew being uncomfortable might come in handy someday, like when I was in a ring and such.
Yes, why are you telling me all this?
Okay. Could everybody hear that, by the way? Okay, so I'll tell you why it was so hard to find. It's a deleted scene. I remember seeing the movie, and I remember seeing that scene and being impressed. I don't remember watching deleted scenes, but apparently I did, because it's not in the actual cut of the movie. And I could not find it for years. I looked for what I thought he might have said. And then this week, I just happened to find it. Interestingly, after finding it, I looked up the transcript. You can find transcripts of movies online now. I looked up the transcript and I actually found the conversation. It's slightly different from the way that they do it in the movie. He uses different words. But if you couldn't understand Rocky's accent, which is understandable. So as I said, Steps, that's the boy. He asks him why he's doing the loading instead of somebody else. And he says, it makes your head stronger. Sometimes I used to stare at this faraway streetlight for nearly half an hour without blinking. Or I'd be squeezing a ball until my hands felt like they were going to explode. I was training myself to do things that were uncomfortable, because I knew getting used to being uncomfortable might come in handy someday. Like when some slam trapper trying to flatten parts of your head and your body. Right. He was a boxer. That's the point of the movie. If you've never seen Rocky, which is not reasonable to me, but if you've never seen it, he was a fighter, he was a boxer. And what he's telling the boy is that he used to train himself literally to be uncomfortable. Exactly like the Zohar. Right? Exactly what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was suggesting. That's what Rocky Balboa was telling this boy. To train yourself to be uncomfortable, it will come in handy one day. But you know what? It's not just Rocky, and it's not just the Zohar. It's Rav Kook as well. Rav Kook comments on this Gemara. This is a famous Gemara about Hillel. This is the Gemara's in Shabbos, all about Hillel and the difference between Hillel and Shammai. This is it's the same area in the Gemara where the convert comes to Hillel to be converted and stand on one foot, etc., etc. So in those stories, there are these two men. I don't know if they're Jewish or not. I can't tell. They make a bet. One of them says, you'll never be able to get Hillel upset. And the other one says, I'll take that bet. And they wager some money. And the one who made the bet goes and tries to annoy Hillel. And the Gemara specifically says that it was Shabbat Eve. It was Erev Shabbat. It was Friday afternoon. And Hillel was in the middle of washing his head. Chofef Rosho. And this man went, he passed by the door of the house, and he called out, is Hillel here, is Hillel here? Hillel came out in his bathrobe and said, what do you need? And he started asking him ridiculous questions. He asked him a series of ridiculous questions. Hillel calmly gives him answers. And then finally, the man himself actually gets upset and says, you know, your Hillel, may there be not many like you in Israel, because he made him lose money. And Hillel says, why? And he says, because I lost 400 dudes through you, because you didn't lose your temper. And Hillel said, it was very important that I not lose my temper. Everybody knows this Gemara. So Rav Kook comments on it. And Rav Kook says, Asibot shem yashvot et hadat, the things that make us calm, shelo yadam mitrageish u bali de'akpada, that make us not get upset, tiana barov o b'matzav hamnucha hashleima, usually it's if you're in a state of complete rest, a person who's just, you know, totally at peace, totally serene, serenity now. What's his name? Jerry Stiller, Zichrono Livracha, I guess. Serenity now. Shaz da'ato shel adam yushevet v'libo rachav v'lo yargizuhu kol kach benakel dvarim shehem l'morat ruchal. That would have been a good clip to put on here. All right, doesn't matter. So that person, he is very, very calm, so he's not going to get upset. Even though it's true that when a person is in a state of complete rest, it actually sometimes can be quite easy to disrupt that rest because they're so restful. But on the other hand, they may be in such a good mood that you won't be able to do anything to them. He says, however, on the other hand, sometimes being in a state of hatrada, of being bothered and being hard at work, sometimes can prepare you and train you to be patient and tolerant, even though you don't have menuchat nefesh. Certainly a person who's hard at work, he's not calm. However, he says, "Hachanam ninseit biyota adam masur laol shel tirdot nefesh, he batzma tachshireu lizbol gam ken dvarim shem shinuyim b'matzav ruchol." It prepares you and trains you to get used to extreme changes in environment and situation, which is essentially what disrupts and upsets us. We jump ahead. He says, "Biyot adam machshir atzmo latzet mimatzav shel ol v'hatrada lematzav shel menucha v'shalvat nefesh, az mitkabzot shtei sibot biyachad." When a person prepares himself to go from states of hatrada to menucha, so he is actually getting the best of both worlds. Shekol achat mehena garemet shtilat koach hasav. Sorry, this is the worst thing. I apologize. A person who is constantly training himself to get out of hatrada and into menucha, he'll always be upset, because there's always going to be things that prevent him from doing that. Hamatzav ha-menucha od lo ba. He is not yet in a state of complete menucha. A person who's always looking forward to be in menucha while he's in hatrada, he's not there yet. She'azor la'archiv et adav. Ha'askama ha'pnimit ha'nimset bo'otam ha'zmanim sha'adam ha'asur behem la'ol ha'shinuim. Okay, it continues. It says, a person who's constantly trying to get to the end, so he finishes his hard work and he gets to rest, he's not there yet. And he's not, you know, in the working mode, so he's getting the worst of both worlds. Now he jumps ahead and he points out that's what the story is about. The genius of the guy who was making the bet, he went to Hillel dafka on Erev Shabbat. Because that's when a person is actually trying to transition from hatrada to menucha, from the work week to the rest of Shabbat. He's not there yet, but he's transitioning. He's trying to move from the hectic, frantic work week into the serenity of Shabbat. He's trying to be alone. He's in the shower. There's nothing worse than when a person is trying to be alone. You know, imagine you're in the shower or you're in the bathroom and someone's bothering you and they won't leave you alone. The kid is knocking on the door. People are asking when you're coming out, right? There's nothing worse. You just want to be alone. This is your private time. That was the worst point to go to Hillel, or the best from the perspective of the guy making the bet. He was in the shower. Milta ditzniuta. He wasn't ready for people. But what happened? But this shows you the level of anava. Anava also, by the way, Rashi sometimes translates anava as savlanut. Savlan. As a person who's tolerant. Because that's the essence of being an anav. It's a person who's willing to put up with whatever comes his way. And so that's what Hillel was. Hillel, you know, at the very, very worst point to go to him in order to annoy him, and he still wouldn't be annoyed. That's the story. Now, Rav Chaim Cohen continues. if anybody has any comments, feel free. He actually looks at this from several different perspectives. He looks at it from a psychological behavioral perspective. He looks at it from a national perspective. And then he finally looks at it from a spiritual Averot Mitzvot Yetzer Hara perspective. He says, first of all, we can learn about anger. Most of the time, anger comes from surprise. Person is indignant because something happened that he wasn't expecting. If you expected it, you wouldn't get angry. When do we get angry? When a coworker does something that was out of line. When a child behaves in a way that we didn't expect it to. When a spouse disrespects, whatever. When we weren't expecting it, you should not have been acting like this. But, you know, if a baby, for example, if a baby acts like a baby, we don't get upset because we were expecting that. A baby can't not act like a baby. It's when they get a little bit older that you were hoping that they would learn, that's when we get upset. You come home after a hard day of work and you find out they ate your dinner. He came home expecting to eat his dinner, and now he doesn't have any. He was surprised. Really, it's the surprise that makes you angry. If a person prepares himself before he gets home for the possibility that there won't be any dinner, you should think to yourself, I imagine to myself that I have no dinner when I get home. And therefore, if I have dinner, it's a bonus, it's a plus, but I won't be upset if I don't. He says, this is a klal gadol b'tikon amidot, harbe me'od mi'amidot ashliliyot ba'ot mi'bnei tzipiyot lo nechonot. It's all about expectations. He says, because we have expectations, we get angry, or we get upset, or we get jealous, or we get whatever it is. Kach ledugma, adam etzapeh she'yechabduhu, you expect people will respect you. And therefore, when they don't, you get very upset. But if you were in a place where nobody knows you, right? Where nobody knows who you're supposed to be, then you wouldn't be surprised if they didn't give you the respect that you're used to. I'm thinking of a couple of stories. You know what? We don't have time for stories right now. So let me just continue over here. So he says, "Eimi adam yodea benafsho shabo olam hazeh unolad la'amal." Person should prepare himself also that this is a world of work. This is getting back to that idea of being b'menucha or being b'derech. If a person realizes that this entire world, his entire life, he's really b'derech, so then he won't be surprised. However, this is the key. If a person believes, which is what, you know, the marketing world would have us believe, that a person was born for menucha and hana'a, for rest and enjoyment, he'll be disgusted anytime he's required to work. He won't be able to gather the energy that he needs. Dugma says, for example, some people will like this example, some people will hate it. Anybody who knows that they need to clean the house, you need to be involved in cleaning the house. To clean the floors, to wash the dishes. You have to ask yourself, what will happen? Am I one of the people that has to be involved in cleaning the house? Or is that all on the shoulders of my wife or whoever it is? What happens when your wife asks you to help? If your perspective is that that's the job of someone else in the house, so when somebody asks me to help, so it's a bonus for them. And it's not my job. So I'll get up, but I'll be begrudging about it. However, if by default I understand that it's my job to clean the house, so then sometimes I get out of the job, but sometimes I don't. And when I have to do it, I have to do it. It's not a big deal. Let's jump ahead now to what I was talking about when I said he deals with this on a national level. Yeah. Here. Here. Hine. Misha Savor, Shahayada Sophia Yala Volaritz Livnota. Anybody who thought that the point of coming to Eretz Israel was simply to come here and build Humitzapek Farley Hanot Vlanuach. Shekin Lefitziviotav, Humargish Shahagia Lemchotzavzo. We did it. Victory. We've come and we've built. It's over. Mimele Beit Azot, Ksheish Kashim Veit Modidiot, Im Oivim, Vim Tsarot, Hualul Argish. When we get attacked, when there are enemies, when there's problems with the government, when there's problems with the economy, when there's problems with sickness or with our jobs, so a person feels a great weakness. They feel depression. They feel frustration. He won't be able to handle it. That there's more to do. There's a Beit Mikdash to build. There's Hashrat Hashchina. Who yodeh heitev shalamrot kol advarim aniflaim shezakinu bahem b'chaste shamayim livnot litbases be'eretz HaKodesh adayin lo yiganu ala menucha v'ala nachala. If you thought we had already reached it, then the disengagement was probably a very harsh blow. Right? It was a very harsh blow for the Dati Leumi movement because it meant that, you know, we thought we had arrived and we hadn't. But if you knew that we hadn't yet arrived, so then it's just one more setback to overcome. We're waiting for the korbanot. Anybody who knows that we haven't yet arrived is still in derech mode. It's still in the mode of a soldier who is still looking out for enemies and still knows that at any given time something can happen. You're going to have victims and sacrifices. But he's strong.
It sounds like he's saying, don't get too comfortable.
That's exactly what he's saying. He's saying, we can't get comfortable. There's nothing to be comfortable about because we haven't reached it yet. And if we get comfortable, then when things don't work out, that's when we get depressed and upset. But if we weren't comfortable to begin with, then we'd be fine with it. As long as we know the real destination, we would know that we're not there yet if we knew the real destination. The people who built the land, if they ran into difficulty, they didn't just say, oh, you know, I guess this is not going to work out. They didn't just say, oh, I thought we had arrived, but now that we see there's, you know, it's still hard. We don't have the koch to do it. No, they were the generation that were willing to put up with anything in order to succeed. And the point over here is that as long as you realize that life is not easy and that life is going to throw things at you because we haven't reached the destination, then you're going to be okay. Here's another clip. This one's actually quite well known. I've seen on many different websites as a motivational clip. I put it up to the exact moment that we need. I'll make it optimized again so that you can all hear. Here.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not point.
All right, that's pretty specific to the movie itself. But I think you get the point. That's Rocky again. That was actually his son in the movie. Telling him that... you know, sometimes you get knocked down, but you have to be able to get up. Sheva yipol tzadik vakam. Didn't quote Mishle, but he could have. Then we get to the last part, and this is where we're going to end. This is getting to the spiritual aspect. He says, "Atzorach la'akir et yetzer hara v'sakanotav. Lo'or yisod zeh, nasik od devar chashuv. Mikan navin. Ad kama chashuv sheyeda ha'adam sheyesh lo yetzer hara v'kochot shlalim shalunim apilo." A person has to understand that he was created with the yetzer hara. There's nothing he can do. He was created with the Yetzer Hara. Nobody was created, almost nobody, was created without a Yetzer Hara. Kodem kol, akarat ha-Yetzer shomeret et ha-adam ishananut. It keeps you out of complacency. גם אם ברוך השם זכה האדם ללכת בדרך השם, להתענג בדבקות, ידענה שיצרו של אדם מתקבר עליו בכל יום. Even if you think you've defeated it, it's going to come back stronger and stronger. נטיות הלב השליליות אינן נעלמות מהאדם. הן מציאות בתרדימה, ובכל עת עלולות להתעורר ולתקוף את האדם ולהטטו מן הדרך. If you haven't felt it in a while, that's just because it's hiding, right? The petach chatat rovetz. It's hiding at the doorway, waiting to get you when you least expect it. Al tamid ba'atzmecha ad yom motcha. Ha'ikarut em ha'kochot ha'shleim v'chinei ha'tanefesh l'itmodedut el nechama. And this plays two roles. Number one, if you think that you're, the first one he says, is that you think that you've gotten away from the Yitzhara, you should just know, that's a bad sign, because it means that it's going to get the drop on you the next time. Shenit, hakarat ha'yetzer melamedet et ha'adam lakum b'nidifotav. The second thing is, that if you know that you have a Yitzhara, and you know that it's going to get you every once in a while, then when it does get you, then you know that you can get up afterwards, because you know that was the Yitzhara, and it's built that way, it's built to knock you down. But if you're not aware of it, if you don't think about it that way, then when you get knocked down, you just think, okay, this is me, this is who I am. Mashal ha'madavar adomeh, im adam nifza v'nechbal b'sha'ashu b'milchama. I love this metaphor. If a person, I would have used sports, but because it's Israel, they use war. If a person gets injured in a war, yesh lo kochot l'amshich l'ilachem, he can keep fighting. Ve'inu ma'abed l'eshtonotav. Imagine you got shot in the arm. Okay, if anybody's actually gotten shot in the arm, then I apologize if I'm bringing up bad memories. Imagine you got shot in the arm. You get shot in the arm in a war, you keep going. At least that's what Hollywood has us believe. You keep going, you keep fighting. But imagine you got shot in the arm in your house, okay? You're not going to be a gever about it. You're going to call the hospital, you're going to try to, you'd fall over, you'd be very upset. You can get up, you can absorb blows. I can tell you personally, as a hockey player, both in camp and in school, sometimes I would play with shin guards that protect your shins, your legs. Sometimes I'd play without. In the middle of the game, you play hockey without shin guards, you're going to get hit in the leg. And anybody who's gotten hit in the shins, you know how painful that is. I can promise you, in the middle of the game, not once did I stop in the middle of the game to complain about my shins, about getting hit. In the middle of the game, never. You keep playing, you keep running around. But at the end of the game, when the adrenaline dies down, you sit down and you pull up your sweat pant leg and you see you've got, black and blue marks all over your leg. That's when you start to feel it. Because the game is over and you can relax now. But when you relax, that's when the pain starts. Okay, so if a person realizes that the Yetzer is there, and he knows that he's in the midst of a constant battle with the Yetzer, so he's able to put up with all of the blows that the Yetzer sends his way, and to get up afterwards, and to keep going, to get knocked down, but to keep going. He's also aware and prepared for what the Yetzer has to throw at him. It reminds me of the story. I guess we'll sort of end with this: the story in the Torah of Yaakov fighting with the Saros shel Esav. So the Torah says that ve'avek ish imo, that they were embraced in wrestling all night. They were fighting all night. So I've always preferred the explanation that, well, there's a question over there. The question is, in the middle of the fight, it says, the Torah says, Vayarki lo yacholo, the angel saw, the Sar shel Esav, whatever, the man that Yaakov was fighting, saw that he could not overcome Yaakov. So he stuck out his arm and Vayiga b'kaf yirecho, and he dislocated his leg, or he injured Yaakov. And then it says that Yaakov held on until the morning, and he was able to defeat the man that way, the Sar shel Esav that way. And the question becomes two things. Number one, how was it that the Sar shel Esav could say, I see that I can't defeat him? And then he was able to dislocate his leg. It sounds like there was a stalemate. And then,
are you speaking?
Can you not hear me?
Anybody else have trouble hearing?
Can people not hear me?
I hear you.
Can everybody hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. So the Yaakov says, sorry, where was I? Yeah. Yaakov is fighting with the Sar shel Esav, and the Torah says that the Sar shel Esav can't defeat Yaakov, but then he gives him a blow. How do we understand that? And second of all, how does Yaakov hold on afterwards? So I think the answer is that Yaakov had an understanding that this blow that the Sar Shel Esav just gave him, that was the last of his koach. Yaakov understood that he's in a fight with the Yetzer Hara, and he's not going to be complacent. But he understands that if the Yetzer Hara is going to give him this blow, that means that he's nearly at the end of the fight. And so Yaakov is able to put up with that. He's able to deal with that blow and hold on afterwards because he knows that this is the fight that he's in. And I think it's very similar to this idea of understanding Yetzer Hara as being in a battle and the key to understanding that it is a battle. Now going back, Rav Chaim Cohen's point ultimately was that this is connected to the Torah being given in the Midbar. The Torah is being given to the people in the Midbar because they need to understand as they receive the Torah, the world is a derech. It's not a menucha. It's not a nachala. This is not a place where we arrive and we just enjoy ourselves. This is a derech. And if you go through life realizing that you're in the derech, that's the key to success because you'll be aware of all the difficulties and because you'll know that sometimes you're going to fall, sometimes you're going to get hurt, and you just need to get up and keep going. That's how you handle it. When you know that you have a ya'ad, a sofi, then you're not going to be bothered by all the problematic things that you find on the way. I want to point out that this, you know, going back to the Yalkut Shimoni, the one that seemed out of place, I just think it's interesting that if the people would have received the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, then maybe they would have said, okay, we've arrived. It's all over. We have the Torah, we have Eretz Yisrael, we're done. We don't need to worry about anything else. But because they received it in the Midbar, they actually received it in a place where they knew that they had not reached their ultimate destination. The Torah was received in a place where they were baderech. Its essence was surrounded by drichut. That's how they received it. You know, it's true that they had the mud and everything else, but still, they were in the desert. They were surrounded by, you know, snakes and scorpions and death everywhere. And so they understood that that's the way that you have to live this world. And I think it's a great preparation for Shavuot. So just to recap what we did, if anybody has any questions, feel free to ask. But we talked about why we read Bamidbar before Shavuot. The Pashup Shad of the Gemara is that it's a fluke. We just have to read Bechukotai before Shavuot. But Tosfot says that we read Bamidbar as a buffer for Bechukotai, and the Marasha takes it to the next step and says Bamidbar is read before Shavuot because we want to get the numbers in. We want to show Hashem how Hashem loves us. But we added on that there is a deep connection between Midbar and the acceptance of the Torah, based on the Gemara Nedarim and on the Midrash, and explained to Rashi and Ben Yoyada. Rashi says that you're supposed to do it for free, but we went more with the Ben Yoyada about the importance of being an anav, of being humble, which means being able to put up with things, with tolerating, and being a savlat. We saw that the Talei Chaim has this idea of a matzav nafshi of menucha versus a matzav nafshi of derech. Rocky talked about training to be uncomfortable. And then we saw Rav Kook talking about how Hillel's greatness was that even in the moments when he should have been most susceptible to disruption and to becoming angry because it was Erev Shabbat and he was in the shower, he still was unflappable and he wasn't able to be bothered. And then we saw how in at least three dimensions this is critical. First of all, from a personal psychological dimension, this is great preparation for life in general, for a person to not have expectations. That's the key, to not have expectations of that everybody should respect you, that life should be easy, that it should be fun. Because that then when your expectations are dashed, that's when you get upset. Number two, from a national perspective, we need to understand that we're not yet at the Yad HaSofi, the final destination. And so if we realize that we're not at the final destination, then when there's setbacks, we know that we need to keep going. And then finally, from a spiritual perspective, understanding that the Yetzer Hara is here and he is here to knock us down can protect us in two ways. Number one, we're prepared for him. And number two, when he does knock us down, we know that we're able to get up. I think that's a great preparation for Shavuot. I want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. Anybody has any questions or comments, feel free.